If you look carefully on my brother's forehead, there is to this day a spot of graphite where I stabbed my brother with a pencil. That's right. I once stabbed my younger brother with a pencil. And in preparing this message, I asked him if he remembered the stabbing, and well, he responded.
Hi, everyone. Todd here, Pastor Mark's brother. I was talking with him this week, and he asked me if I remembered the incident from when he stabbed me in the head with a pencil. I was too young to remember the actual incident, thankfully. However, it's one that will stick with me for forever, because that mark that he talks about, it's right here. Right there, little gray spot. It's not going anywhere. I've had it for the longest time, and I'll probably have it forever. Thanks, Mark.
The mark that reminds my brother of Mark, it still exists to this day on his head. And my brother, he's one of my favorite human beings on the planet, and I would do anything for him. There are ways that we can bring out the best in each other, especially when we're laughing and joking, which is, well, it's usually about bathroom humor. But especially when we were younger, there are also ways that we could push each other's buttons like no one else. That's family, isn't it? As we continue today in our series, Bless This Mess, we are turning to the relationships that most often bring out the best and the worst in our humanity. That's our family. Now, family, it really has to be described broadly today, right? It's easy to think of a family as like a nuclear family, which is generally defined as two parents and children. But for the conversation that I want to have today about family, that's way too limiting. Yes, when we talk about family, that would include what we would call the nuclear family, but family also includes, well, it's the family that we grew up in, it's the family we're with right now, and I'm grateful for my parents and that they're both still with me. And I'm grateful for my brother who is willing to record videos for me as sermon illustrations. My parents and my brother, oh, they're my family. But then in addition, my wife, Jana, and my two kids, Drew and Kate, well, they are my family. And I could go on and I could include my father and mother-in-law, my sisters-in-law, my brother-in-law, my aunts and my uncles, my cousins, my grandfather, and so on. Family. There are a lot of different ways that we can define it. Now, family is broad and it's widely defined. So family also includes people who are in single-parent households. It includes single people who are living alone. It includes people who are single with roommates. It includes people who are single, again, maybe through a divorce or a death. A family includes blended families with children from previous marriages and from other parents. Family is a broad and diverse term in today's world, and it includes more circumstances and more situations than I have time right now to list. So I want to define family very broadly today, and that brings up a question. Who or what do you think of when you think of family? Family means a lot of different things to different people, and when we think of family in a bigger way, then, well, the words of this poem spring to my mind. To live above with those we love, well, that will be glory. But to live below with those we know, well, that's another story. To live below with those we know, right? I mean, that's what we're talking about today, family. It's those we know. It's those who know us, and it's messy. Often even worse than a pencil in the forehead messy. We want to consider today how God can bless the mess that is our families. All the different kinds of ways we view family. And to do this, we're going to engage a bit with the story of a really messed up Old Testament family. And there are lots of stories in the Old Testament that are messed up to choose from. Today, we're going to focus on Dad Isaac and Mom Rebecca and their twin boys, Esau and Jacob. And this family story is found in Genesis chapter 25 through 35. It's a story that involves, well, living below with those we know in very human and very dysfunctional ways. This is a family feud sort of story, and I'm going to quickly tell their story, but I'll no way be able to cover all the details. So let me encourage you to read the whole story on your own. Again, that's in Genesis 25 through 35. Now, after a quick telling of that story, I'm going to give you three truths about family from that story. So here's our story. Jacob, who was the second born of twin boys, and well, he always felt and acted like the underdog. He and his older twin brother literally tussled in the womb, and it spilled out into their childhood and adolescence. Now, Jacob's name literally means heel grabber or deceiver, and Well, he lived up to it by lying and cheating and stealing from those who loved him most and best, especially his brother Esau. We like to have good characters and bad characters in stories. And in the story of Jacob and Esau, well, Jacob's name, which means deceiver, it really became his destiny, and sadly, it defined his character. And this is a messy, real story, and I'm not sure exactly who the good character is in this story. Everyone in this story has some good qualities, and everyone has some bad, a lot like us and like real life. So Jacob and Esau, they have a challenging relationship, and well, relationships between siblings can be incredibly challenging at times. I saw a quote recently from a pastor, Jim Harnish. He was writing about his abiding rivalry with his twin brother, Jack, who's also a pastor. And he wrote, "In spite of our obvious similarities, our relationship was not always idyllic. We shared all the intimacy of two cats in a burlap bag. The evidence of our struggle of wills was left on the bottom panels of our bedroom doors, where we locked each other out and tried to kick each other's door in." I love that phrase describing two brothers. The intimacy of two cats in a burlap bag. I can't relate to that at all. Oh, wait. My brother and I each have scars on our faces or pencil marks to prove otherwise. That brings up a question for you to ponder and to discuss. If you have siblings, how would you describe your relationship with your siblings? Let's discuss that. So siblings can be both wonderful and they can be difficult at times. They can be a mark that leaves a mark. In our story today, Jacob was envious and angry and bitter toward his brother. And well, that was Jacob and Esau. And again, I'm going to tell you their story, and then we're going to pull three quick truths from that. So one day, after robbing Esau of his most prized possession, his father's blessing, Jacob, the deceiver, he hightails it out of town, and he moved far away to the land of his mother's brother. He left, and his older brother was fuming with anger and murmuring threats of murder. And well, there, Jacob finally meets his deceiving match. His uncle Laban was an even bigger scoundrel than Jacob. And Jacob, he ends up marrying both of Laban's daughters, Leah and Rachel. But it cost Jacob 20 years of hard labor at his father-in-law's business for him to marry those two daughters and to receive a flock of goats. After 20 years of a bitter relationship with his father-in-law, Laban, frustrated Jacob made a late-night escape with his two wives, with his children, with his servants, and a whole bunch of goats. Now, where was he going? Where's Jacob heading? Jacob was headed home. You all have that place in your head, right? Some place that you define in your head as your original home. You may be able to picture it, but it's not always fondly, right, that we remember that place. And home certainly wouldn't have been a fond memory for Jacob. It was a scary place. But Jacob headed back anyway to the land of his parents and his, well, as best as he knew, his very angry brother Esau, who's now had 20 years to let the bitterness and the resentment grow within him. And well, in the morning, Laban wakes up and he finds that Jacob and his family are gone, and he chases after Jacob, and he's fuming mad too. So get this picture. A mad Laban is behind Jacob, and angry Esau is in front of him, and here's the deceiver. Jacob, he has two broken and battered family relationships sandwiching him in. And well, anyone who's endured a family squabble with two sides can relate to Jacob. Caught between Laban and Esau, caught between a rock and a hard place. Have you ever been in this place in your family? Have you ever been stuck between a rock and a hard place with family you deeply love? I have. Those aren't my stories to share with you today, but that feeling of being trapped is all too real. The feeling of being paralyzed and not knowing what to do. I've been there, and likely you have too, because family can be messy. And sometimes marriages get stuck in this place. A lack of emotional connectivity can be on one extreme, or an unhealthy codependency on the other can lead to a marriage wedged between a rock and a hard place. And sometimes, even as an adult, you can look back to the family that you grew up in, and you can have a boatload of unresolved stuff. All too many of us can feel stuck emotionally, relationally, and yes, even spiritually by the messiness of our families. So here's a question we're going to address. What do you do when your relationships with the people you love the most get stuck? Well, I'm going to help us out with answering that question today. Let's go back to our story, which I think can help us to get unstuck. So now Jacob has Esau marching towards him from his family home, and his uncle Laban is chasing after him. Both are fighting mad. Laban catches up with Jacob first. And when he arrives, by God's grace, cooler heads prevail. A relationship summit is held, and they agree to part ways, and they mark that moment with a ceremony. Both men build rock pillars to mark their agreement. In Genesis 31, verses 48 and 49, we read, "Then Laban declared, 'This pile of stones will stand witness to remind us of the covenant we have made today.' This explains why it was called Galeed, witness pile. But it was also called Mizpah, which means watchtower. For Laban said, 'May the Lord keep watch between us to make sure that we keep this covenant when we are out of each other's sight.'" The irreconcilable relationship between Jacob and Laban, well, it gets unstuck. By making an agreement before God, Laban calls this agreement a covenant. At Sycamore Creek Church, we encourage our small groups to make covenants. We also have a leadership covenant for anyone who leads in our church. Covenants are simply mutual agreements about how we're going to treat each other. Covenants are agreements that prevent disagreements. A common example of a covenant are the vows that a couple takes on their wedding day. Spouses agree to love, honor, and cherish one another. I think of those vows and imagine with me, does a couple need those vows on their wedding day? I would argue that mostly they don't, not on the wedding day. At most weddings, couples are on their best behavior on the wedding day. They don't need their vows that day. What they need, though, is to remember to love, honor, and cherish one another 6 months later when one of them is late for dinner or the other person is leaving clothes on the bedroom floor or worse. Here's the principle for our relationships. You make a covenant before you need a covenant. You make a covenant before you need a covenant. And Jacob and Laban make a covenant, an agreement about how they're going to treat each other. And this has been called the Mizpah benediction. And when you read this benediction in its context, Laban and Jacob, who they have a lethal family relationship, they basically say to each other, "I'll stay on my side of this pile of rocks and you stay on your side of the pile of rocks. And may God watch over both of us." This isn't a kiss and make up session. This is high level negotiation of an irreconcilable, toxic relationship. I don't want to over romanticize what happens between Jacob and Laban because, well, their relationship never gets completely fixed. They basically agree to disagree and they each go on their way. Now, what about the angry brother who's in front of Jacob? The last time Jacob again saw his slightly older brother Esau, he was spitting mad and ready to take his head off at the shoulders. So after his ceremony with Laban, that's now behind him, Jacob has what we might call a come to Jesus meeting with God, and Jacob's transformed. You see, Jacob wrestles with God, which is, I think, something that we can all relate to doing metaphorically, but Jacob does it literally. And through that wrestling, Jacob has an amazing and transformative encounter with the God of the universe, and well, Jacob walks away from that encounter with God with a new name, Israel, which literally means wrestles with God. Jacob has a new name, and he has a limp that reminds him of his wrestling match with God. And as a reminder, Israel is not only Jacob's new name, it's the name for God's people. Jacob is a critical part of Israel's family story. So Jacob, he was undefeated before that important wrestling match, but then again, he'd only wrestled with and deceived human beings up to that point. And that night, Jacob took his first loss. When he wrestled with God, Jacob was humbled. On that very same day, Jacob, Israel now, is a changed and a more humble man, and he meets up with his brother Esau, the one he had deceived and hurt so badly 20 years earlier, and they're reconciled. Grace, mercy, and forgiveness is extended and received. And we don't know if everything was perfect. They were human beings like you and me, after all, but Jacob, now Israel, the man formerly known as the deceiver, tells his brother tenderly and genuinely, "For to see your face is like seeing the face of God, now that you have received me favorably." So the summary here is that one relationship, the relationship between Jacob and Esau, has healing. And the other, between Jacob and Laban, does not. I think of it like this. When they have a family gathering, that the seat for Laban around the dinner table remains empty, while the seat for Esau has a chance of being filled. So what do we learn from this story about our seemingly messy, irreconcilable, toxic family relationships? Oh, we learn this important truth, that God wants to heal our family relationships. God doesn't intend harm or messiness or hurt or pain through our families. And so I'm going to pull out three relational truths that are true today for followers of Jesus about family relationships. We'll use this messy Old Testament story of Jacob and Esau to spring us into the New Testament and to find some underlying principles that can be applied to our families and to our relationships. We're going to talk about a no and a yes and a maybe for healing and blessing our families. Let's start with a no. My messed up family can be healed and blessed by saying no to revenge. If family relationships don't automatically become toxic and unhealthy. Usually we're pushed there by some kind of trauma or injury, by adultery or gossip or theft or lying or accusations or physical or sexual or emotional abuse. And all these kinds of awful things happen that put our family relationships into that category of messy, irreconcilable, and toxic. We see some of this stuff in Jacob's story and throughout many other Bible stories. And people respond differently to these kinds of trauma. Some people experience this kind of trauma and they become codependent. They never self-differentiate from the trauma and they live in this land of let's pretend and they suffer themselves because of it. And some of us today have toxic relationships that we are unhealthfully engaged in, and toxic relationships are often a response to family trauma in our background. Now, another reaction is what I call the hit back reflex. You hurt me, and so I'm going to hurt you. And it seems natural to hit back, but it's also unhealthy. What we often forget is that no amount of pain inflicted on another person actually soothes our own pain. In our story today, by God's grace, Jacob and Laban had enough sensibilities to know that getting even would not make things better. They stop the cycle of deceiving and retribution. Their covenant was a building exercise that is the right thing to do given the toxic nature of their relationship. Sometimes you just have to agree to disagree. Now in the New Testament, Paul teaches that followers of Jesus, through the power of the Holy Spirit and the gift of Christian community, can resist that hit back reflex. This is choosing not to escalate conflict. Look at how Paul writes about this in his letter to the church in Rome. Dear friends, never take revenge. Leave that to the righteous anger of God. For the scriptures say, I will take revenge. I will pay them back, says the Lord. Who's the only one able to take revenge? It's God. The wise, growing follower of Jesus leaves revenge to God, for God alone is holy enough to make all things right. Now, the first way to heal our messed up family relationships is to say no to revenge. And that leads us to a yes. My messed up family can be healed and blessed by saying yes, yes to reconciliation. Now, by reconciliation, what I mean is extending forgiveness. That's work that starts internally with us. There's been a progression in this series where we started with Easter and the peace of Jesus, and that led us to last week and allowing Jesus' peace to transform us. We said last week that relationship work, well, it starts with ourselves. And that progression continues today. Reconciliation for Jacob and Esau, it started with Jacob wrestling with God. Jacob approached reconciliation with Esau, a changed and humbled person. And here's how Paul teaches followers of Jesus about reconciliation. He says, do all that you can to live in peace with everyone. Paul admonishes followers of Jesus to do our best, to do all we can to reconcile with those who they were in conflict with. While that's what Paul wrote, let me also remind you that, well, you can only do what you can do, right? And nothing more. And, well, this is where this family stuff gets tricky. What doing all I can means is that I take ownership and I do the work of forgiving someone else, regardless of whether or not they reciprocate. And if you've ever been in recovery, you learn that my job is to keep my side of the street clean. And when we genuinely forgive those who have hurt us, we evict them from renting space in our brain and in our heart because, well, they've not been paying rent anyhow. Now, sometimes this forgiveness is done face-to-face. Sometimes forgiveness is extended both ways. And, well, sometimes the relationship forges ahead. But see, at other times, forgiveness isn't possible face-to-face. Sometimes forgiveness is not reciprocated. Sometimes the relationship is just too toxic or the other person isn't living anymore. They might be dead. Regardless of what the other person does or does not do, We have the capacity as a forgiven follower of Jesus to release that person from our inner jail, to release them from unforgiveness, and to thereby release ourselves from bitterness and resentment. Now, forgiveness is what it appears that Jacob and Esau, who had been stuck in this family feud for 20 years, did with each other. Esau forgave Jacob for stealing his father's blessing. He refused to let unforgiveness trap him anymore. And, well, Jacob was sorry and contrite, and he sought forgiveness. And as a result, these twins were freed together. For followers of Jesus, we say yes to reconciliation, which leads to a question. Was there a time when you have said yes to reconciliation? Is there a place that God is calling you to that now? I hope and pray that you've been able to forgive the ways you've been hurt. And may God's Spirit work in you and move you toward a continued willingness to forgive. That's a yes. We've covered a no. And we've covered a yes. Well, let's talk about the maybe. My messed up family can be healed and blessed by saying maybe, maybe to restoration. Now, by restoration, I mean that things go back to normal, whatever normal looks like. Restoration is a reset of the relationship. And using the Jacob-Laban relationship as an example, this wasn't possible. They didn't want to go back to normal. But while in the Jacob-Esau relationship, it was possible to have normal. And we don't know if full restoration happened between Jacob and Esau, but it's certainly possible. I stuck a pencil on my brother's head, and we've moved from reconciliation to restoration into laughing about that story today. Restoration is tricky, and restoration in relationships is always a maybe. Now, we have an example of how to approach this with our role renegotiation model here at Sycamore Creek Church. It's a model for handling conflict around broken expectations. We always let one another down. We always break expectations. And those broken expectations can be relatively minor things, which we call pinches, or broken expectations can be big things, which we call crunches. Jacob stealing the family birthright from Esau, that's a crunch. But by God's grace, conflict can be addressed, and it can lead to the restoration of a relationship. We hope at Sycamore Creek Church that by handling conflict well, it will lead to restoration. But restoration, even in churches, it's a maybe. And that's why there are places on this model for exits to occur, hopefully planned exits. And that's what Laban and Jacob were able to do, a planned exit. You see, restoration is difficult. It doesn't always happen in real life unless it's a maybe. Now, we have another example of this maybe with Paul in the New Testament. One time, Paul and his companion Barnabas, they got in a heated disagreement about whether a young leader named Mark would travel with them. Paul said no. Barnabas said yes. And eventually, these two ministry friends, they parted ways over their disagreement. But something happened over the years, and we aren't told what, and we don't even really know how this happened. But we think Paul, near the end of his life, wrote these words in his letter to Timothy about Mark. Bring Mark with you when you come, for he will be helpful to me in my ministry. He'll be helpful. Restoration happened. Mark had his place back at Paul's Easter dinner table. You see, sometimes restoration is possible. And for followers of Jesus, restoration is always the goal. It's our aspiration to move away from revenge and to reconciliation and then to restoration. And why is it our aspiration? Because it gives us the path that God takes with us. We miss the mark. We turn our backs on God, and God could easily seek revenge on us, but God doesn't. God, with tender mercy and kindness, reaches out to us and extends his grace. He's done that for me. He's done that for you. God has walked with us from revenge to reconciliation to restoration. God, through Jesus, forgives us of our sin, past, present, and future. And then to top it off, God restores us to a place at God's table, not as a servant, but as a son, a legal heir to everything that is God. God moves from reconciliation to restoration. Thus, is it any wonder that followers of Jesus are given instructions on relationships? For followers of Jesus, restoration is always the goal. In a Peanuts cartoon I came across in preparing this message, Lucy is chasing Charlie Brown. I'll catch you, shouts Lucy. And when I do, I'm going to knock your block off. And suddenly, Charlie screeches to a halt. He turns to Lucy and he says, wait a minute, Lucy. And if you and I, as relatively small children with relatively small problems, can't sit down and talk through our problems in a mature way, How can we expect the nations of the world to get along? And with that, Lucy slugs Charlie, and she says, I had to hit him quick. He was starting to make sense. You see, restoration is always the goal. It's no wonder that Mother Teresa, the lover of the least, when asked what we can do to promote world peace, well, Mother Teresa, she can be summarized in her Nobel Peace Address as saying, go home and love your family. For me, that's loving my wife. It's loving my kids. It's loving my parents and my brother and my family. Living out God's love starts with our families and yours too. It's my prayer for you and for me that God would bless the mess of our families and that by the grace of God, we can live through disagreements and heartache and pain and learn from those experiences and maybe for the sake of future generations, overcome them. God, help us to live out reconciled and restored family relationships. I shared a poem with you earlier that was written by a man named Howard Olds. And the rewrite of that poem goes like this. If we plan to live above with those we love, well, here's the rest of the story. We must live below with those we know, empowered by God's grace and glory. May you approach your family today empowered by God's grace and glory. And may we all be healed and blessed within the mess of family through a no, through a yes, and through a maybe. Amen.